The theme of the service has to do with spirituality and religion. And so I wanted to use for a reading something I'm still working on what religion. Religion was born when it was born. Religion was born when people discovered that they were different from all that surrounded them, that though they lived in a world full of things, they were separate from them. So they judged and named them, trying to thereby gain a sense of place, of companionship, and power. Religion was born when people discovered that they were alone, even among their own kind, and that someday they would die. So they joined with their fellows to seek out the meaning of their loneliness. They spun tales of heroines and heels, of goddesses and gods, of demons and devils, trying to confirm for themselves the sense of place, of time, of comfort, and power. Liberal religion was born when we discovered the circle of truth was too large to be encompassed by a single answer of one generation, or any time or place, that the greater task of union between humans with all of life must be done in openness and with loving kindness. Now, we who claim the name Unitarian Universalist are called upon to continue the search for place, for time, for comfort, for power, by striving to be the instruments of unbounded and all-encompassing love for the whole human family and the whole body of life. Amen. Now, I know a shopkeeper, and he's sort of a quiet guy, and he doesn't express a lot of opinions. But one time when I went to see him, he looked up, he knows I'm a minister, so he looked up at me and he said, you know, I've been to a funeral recently. And the officiant said that anybody who wanted to could get up and say something about the deceased. And he said, you know what? At least seven, and I counted them, people said in the course of their speech, I'm spiritual but not religious. What does that mean? I said, well, I think people are not really sure what they're saying. Because I don't see how you can be spiritual without being religious. They belong together. When we talk about religion, we're talking about gaining meaningful life, power with life, a sense of fulfillment in life, a sense of striving for new experiences in life, a sense of comfort, adventure, and ultimately to help us die with comfort. So when we talk about religion, that's part of what we're talking about. When we talk about spirituality, we're talking about that too. So it isn't really the separation it sounds like. By the way, in writing this sermon, I remembered a portion of a book that comes from the apocryphal writings of Judaism, from the wisdom of Sirach. And Sirach talks about how people build cities and build countries and empires, and how the people with the education, the people who have the money, the people who know how to get up top, they run everything. But you know what? The fabric of the city is in the hands of those who build it. And the expression that he used in a particular translation that I read was that the prayer of these workers was in the practice of their craft. My father was a craft. He was a master plumber, steam fitter. But I took German too. And one of the definitions of the word craft is power. And so when you think about the farmer, in fact, he mentions the man behind the plow trying to converse with the bull or whoever it is, the oxen who are pulling the plow, and how difficult that is. But what he's saying is that the fabric of the world really is in the hands of the people who build it, and the best builders are those who realize a sense of love, a sense of worth, a sense of the future. As they give, doesn't matter whether you're a worker or whether you're not. And that has a special relevance to me because I was brought up in the universalist side of our denomination. And universalists were people who came largely from rural areas. This was in the 18th century in New England and the Middle States. They were farmers. They were small shopkeepers. They were mechanics. And over the years, they grew and developed in our society. And the Unitarians started among what we used to call the upper class, the upper crust. When I was a kid growing up in the Universalist Church in Somerville, we were down in the valley in the Unitarian fortress. And it was built like a fortress. I was scared to go in there. That was up on the hill. And eventually, of course, Unitarians and Universalists came together. And they came together because they realized they had so many common beliefs about life. And when the Second World War happened, and after the war, they passed what they called the GI Bill, so that people could go to, if they served in the military, you could go to college now. So these low class, what my mother used to call low life people, Universalists, could go to college and become like the Unitarians. Well, this is kind of, you know, when you look at it, it's kind of silly, but that's what a lot of church history is made up. A lot of things that we're not particularly interested in, don't particularly want to talk about. But religion we do want to know. Religion we do want to understand. And religion, I take my definition from one of our ministers, the late Henry Nelson Wyman. He said that your religion ultimately is what you commit yourself to. Ultimately, you may commit yourself to some kind of thing today, but not tomorrow. But what is it underlying? What is it that you will live for? What is it that you will struggle for? What is it that if you need to, you will die for? And that's your religion. And what's actually happening, I think, today, the National Council of Churches, which I don't know even if they exist now. They must. They have to. Anyway, because I'm quoting them. The National Council of Churches, which is made up of a lot of Protestant denominations and Eastern Orthodox churches, put some figures out recently because America is always looked at as a country that has a strong Christian, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish base. And what they found out was that there have been significant losses among many, many so-called mainline Protestant churches. What's my figures here? Here we are, right here. Okay, the Lutherans' losses, 20%. 20% Lutheran losses. Methodists, 7%. Episcopalians, 20%. Presbyterians, 28%. American Baptists, 13%. Church of Christ, United Church of Christ, I'm sorry, 26% the loss. Today, it's estimated, depending upon where your sources are, that approximately 59 to 60 million Americans list themselves as nones. They're not affiliated. And on top of that, when the census people talk to them, many, many of them say they don't intend to. They don't want to. They have left organized religion. What about us? Well, if you look at our figures, they're not all that great. We grew at a certain point in the 1960s, and then we lost members in the late 60s and the 70s, and then we gained members in the 80s and the 90s, and then we sort of leveled off. And today, our adult membership is what you would call flat. And our religious education membership is dropping precipitously, except, and I forgot to mention this in the first service, except in our area. In our part of the country, not just in this area here, but in the south part of the country, people generally tend to be more observant of religion than they do in other parts. The attendance figures that are kept by who knows who, they show this up. So we're sort of flat on membership. And the question is, why? What is this all coming from? And what I understand is, and I should understand it as a minister, is that what religion has to offer us is a compelling vision for our life. And it has to be delivered in a way that is not just interesting, but that it's commanding. It's not just telling us, you be nice when you have the time. If you have to go to church when it counts, Christmas and Easter. I used to, when I was in interfaith clergy meetings, and I'd listen to the Protestants and Catholics complaining about the attendance on Christmas and Easter. And one time they looked at me and said, do you have a problem with that? I said, no, we get about the same number of people every Sunday. How do you do that? You have to have a compelling vision. You have to realize that this has to be a part of your daily life. It isn't something you're going to do when the chance to be heroic occurs. It's something you do every part of your life. And I also believe in the institution of the church. I think that the young people who are, and older people who are leaving organized religion must somehow find institutions that will help them gain the sense of faith, of purpose, of hope, of love, will help to drive them to make a difference with their own lives and the lives of the world. You have to do this. I don't care where you are, whatever you're part of, you have to do this. Why, by the way, before I forget it, guess who the people are who are gaining members? I guess without looking at the pictures, I'm pretty smart. I guess that the people who are gaining members are the Mormons, all right, the Jehovah's Witnesses, and several evangelical bodies, but not all evangelical bodies. Some evangelical bodies. And there are a lot of differences in evangelical, but you listen to the news and you think this is it, there's one group. No, there are different ones. But these groups that are gaining members make an impact on society. They sit in the congresses. They sit in the state governments. They sit in county councils and city councils. They take their... When I used to ride a bike before I had all this, and I would go out on the highway, and actually somebody my age shouldn't have been doing that because I got hit and knocked over so many times. But when I would be riding down the street, and up the street would come the Mormon disciples, the two men with their London fog coats and so on, and we'd wave and smile at each other. And we could talk, as long as we didn't talk about theology. As long as we didn't mention theology. And I think theology, of course, is part of the essential of religion. You develop a theology, whether you call it that or not. That is, you develop a way of seeing the source of life. You develop a way of seeing the source of why you should move in this direction. Why you should do these things. Not just today, but tomorrow and every day. So when people leave organized religions, they still have religions. They still have to figure out how to deal with this. And on top of that, what I say is, they jolly well better be creating some new institutions and not assume that they don't need to have institutional religions. I was fascinated by when the political conventions were going on and Bernie Sanders was there, surrounded with all these young people. Crazy for him. I've been a social democrat for a long time, so I appreciate what he was talking about. But what I was told repeatedly before this was, somebody your age can't talk to young people. You have no idea. You don't own a computer. You have no idea what young people are thinking. But if you are alive and paying attention to what's going on, you know. The question is, do you have an impelling vision, and do you have a way of explaining it, working it out, living it, that interests young people, that pulls them in? And what I believe about our faith is, I believe we have an impelling vision, compelling vision. You read this morning my version of the seven principles that come out of the bylaws of the Unitarian Universalist Association. They come out and they talk about affirming and promoting principles. And building a world community is buried down there. It's number 6. Well, after working with this for years, because when I grew up in the Universalist Church, we recited an avowal of faith, Universalist avowal, every time we had a worship service. And the lines in it that stick with me to this day, because they speak about the vision, and they speak to what I have to do. They spoke to me when I was a young person. and what those lines were, that people of goodwill and sacrificial spirit will overcome all evil. Now, often when I hear people reading it, they leave the all out. No, no, no. Overcoming all evil and progressively establishing the realm of heaven here on earth. That's been an impelling vision for me all my life. And I've learned that you have to keep understanding more and more about what it means in your life. It took me a long time, for example, to understand when we talk about building heaven on earth, that this is an evolutionary process that will take generation upon generation upon a generation, and it won't all be done by Unitarian Universalists. Oh no, I hope we don't have that kind of arrogance, because the avowal of faith says, people of goodwill and sacrificial spirit. But these are the people who will also hang in with the faith in building heaven on earth. Now, I'm here now because 5 generations back, some of my forebears found Universalism. They were people up in Maine, and I only know about one from that first generation because we have some as an obituary in some little town in Maine. And what it says in the obituary, it says, by vocation, he was a carpenter. By faith, he was a Universalist. And I only know one story from these Universalists in the past. My great-grandmother, whom I saw once when I was a little boy, apparently during the Civil War, she had a Baptist neighbor, okay? And the Baptist neighbor was wishing that all the Confederates would go to hell. And my great-grandmother, C.V., said, oh, no, no, God is a loving God. God doesn't send people to hell. God sends all of us to heaven sometime, somewhere, somehow. And she looked at the Baptist, looked at her and said to her, aren't you a Christian? And she said, no, I'm a Universalist. And this really blows me away. We're talking about 1863, friends, up in the back of beyond of Massachusetts or Maine or somewhere up there. But the understanding that we have a faith in the human venture, because fundamentally what makes the human venture work is a sense of unbounding, all-encompassing love. Whatever you want to call it God, call it goddess, call it heaven, call it humanity, call it just plain all-encompassing love. But this is what we've said was that this is what the world has to develop and must develop for the human family to continue on and to continue evolving, because we are evolving as human species. We're always in the process of evolving. And life is forever changing, always changing. Whatever we do or don't do to it, the earth is forever in motion and ever changing, and we're a part of that process. And we know right now, if we didn't listen to anything on the news about the campaign, we know right now that a lot of our sisters and brothers in the human family all over the world are frightened, very frightened. We look at Europe especially, and a lot of the people are beginning, the news people say they're turning to the right. What they're saying is that they're frightened, that the system that they have of government, the system of economics, the system of organized religion, is not giving them the sense of vision and compelling rules to live and move in life with happiness and peace, and to know that when they die, this dream will not die, and the next generation will carry on. The next generation then brings me back to the institution of the church. To say that you're a Unitarian Universalist and you have the right to believe in freedom and love in the world is not enough. I wouldn't be here if those ancestors before me. My children, my daughter and my granddaughter, are in this picture, by the way. This picture you've got on the front of your program, this was taken last month. I only saw it today because it was taken on a computer. I don't own a computer. But when we celebrated the 10th anniversary of our senior minister, Reverend Jean Pupke, whom you're all going to vote for because she's running for president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, right? And so we had a service in commemoration of the 10th anniversary. And as you found out, I don't walk very well anymore. So going up to the pulpit and saying my bit my granddaughter and my daughter were there with me. And my great-grandparents would be thrilled if they knew this. But it's because my parents took the institution of the church seriously. They worked in it. They labored in it along with many, many others. But what I'm finding out is that whatever we're doing now, we're not really getting down to people and making them understand that this is a life mission. This is a life mission for you and the generations that follow. How do I know that? Because only 15% of our membership were born and raised in our faith. Only 15%. That means 85% of you came from some whatever background you came from here. And that's not enough. That is nowhere near enough. The compelling vision for me also has to be lived out. I mentioned to you about who's running the Congress, who's running the state legislatures. We have got to train ourselves and our children to do that. We have got to train them to be a Unitarian Universalist means to help transform the world, to help build that life for all people on the world. And to do that, you've got to become a police officer, right? You've got to become a member of the court. You've got to become a social worker. You've got to join and become a state legislator. You have to be an economist. You have to be in the military. My grandson's in the Marine Corps. And we've had members of our family in the military since the revolution that I know of. And these things we have to understand. This is our business. If you don't have children, maybe you should be teaching church school. Maybe you should be working with our young people. Because they need you. They need us. We used to have discussions after church on Sunday dinner. It was called Roast Minister. And what my parents did was to discuss the sermon and what it meant to them. And we kids, as we got older, would get in on this. And then it spread from Sunday to evening meals. And we'd discuss everything under the sun, politics, religion, nothing was exempt from it. In fact, one time when we had one of our most violent arguments, and we all loved each other, you understand? But we could really lay it out. And it was about the Versailles Treaty, 1919, the end of the First World War. And here we were, my mother, my father, my brothers and I, boom, boom, boom. And of course, when we got into politics, why, you know, my brothers and I were Democrats, and my parents were McKinley Republicans. See, as a Unitarian Universalist, we have diversity within ourselves, between ourselves, and we're finally beginning to learn that we do, if we really believe in the world, we have to reflect the world. It's not enough for me to have a sprinkling of, oh, they came from Poland, or they're African American, or maybe they're Swahili or something else. We have to reach out to the world, and I don't agree with my colleagues who say that because we have computers now, we don't have to knock on doors. I built a church knocking on doors. And I believe if we want to reach out to the dispossessed, the disinherited, the people who both major political parties talk about but do so little about, if we want to do that, we do have to go out in the street. We do have to learn to make friends with the whole world and to live it. And when we do that, I know we can change the world. I would not be sitting here in front of you now if I didn't believe that this earth of ours, as far as human life is concerned, is just beginning. What have we been around for as a recognizable species? Less than 2 million years. Hell, the dinosaurs were around for 60, 70, 80 million years. We can do somewhat as well as they did, can't we? We can see ourselves and we can see the problems that exist in the world, which many of which are just plain frightening. They're frightening. When you begin to talk about blowing people up again with nuclear armaments, when you begin to try to destroy people's voting system and destroy their democracy, when the fascist right is beginning to rise again in Europe. This is a frightening world. But it's a world we are a part of, and it's a world we have to learn to understand, and it's a world we have to make a difference in. We have to, all of us. I would like to say that I'm exempt because I'm retired, you know, and I have difficulty walking and all that sort of thing. But I can't, because the vision that I was taught, that we will build a human family in all-embracing love, and we will build heaven on earth, and that will be finally the beginning. The beginning. Not the end. You know, you see all these stories about, and they got married, the end. Nuh-uh. When you talk about utopia, I'm not talking about utopia. I'm talking about building the realm of heaven, which allows for diversity, it allows for conflict, it allows for lots of things. But it's done in the spirit of loving kindness. And it belongs to the whole human family and makes this adventure a starting point for wherever we take off in the universe, the known universe. And that's going to happen. Believe me, when I was a little kid and went to the movies and they had Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, and people, the adults thought that was crazy stuff. And you know now that it's, again, it's just the beginning. This is the Model T era we're in now. So what I want you to understand is that spirituality, which is our search for hope, for love, for faith, for companionship, that this is basic to religion. What's happened to religion, unfortunately, is that it's gotten out of step, and religions are tribal, including us, and we have to get beyond that, and we have to lead the way and reach out for others who agree so that we can get on the business of doing it. It will happen if we do it. If we do it, it will happen. And I hope you believe that too. Thank you much. Yes. We're going to sing another hymn, friends. And you probably don't know it, because it just dawned on me like about a week ago. Next Sunday, the 30th of October, is Reformation Sunday. And without Martin Luther and the Reformation, we would not have a public school system. Never forget that. Because Martin Luther believed that everybody had to be able to read the Bible. He helped to establish the public school system in Germany, which became the model that our people went over and found and took in the 19th century and brought over. So we're not singing Martin Luther's words. We're singing words that are written by one of our ministers, late minister, Kenneth Patton, who was a wonderful, exuberant person who saw the human family in the whole conquest of the world. So let's hear the first bars or whatever it is. And then let's all get into it. Yes, please rise.